It's a joy for me to be here. Right at the beginning, I want to tell you that I am totally out of my comfort zone. If you're half as calm as I am nervous, we ought to make a good team. So, is it okay if this thing lays here on the table? Okay. The topic I have is getting ready for the wedding. And when Carolyn called me, I had to laugh in her ear because I am not a professional speaker, but I am getting ready for a wedding. And so maybe through this, the Lord can speak to all of us and help us to learn something about what he's trying to tell us today. I've written this three times, and so I think through the process, there ought to be something that the Lord can share through me, because so I don't know what he's going to have me say, but I have prayed that what I do say will be what we need. And I really don't want to cry through this whole thing. Carolyn asked me if I would share a little bit of my spiritual journey, and that was the problem, because my life has went in a lot of different directions, and I could have went in any number of journeys in my journey, but I feel like the Lord is bringing me back to probably the most painful part of my journey. So you bear with me. I want to bring honor and glory to him. The verses that Carolyn gave me to start with they're a little hard for me to get a hold of at first, but I feel like I'm gaining on it. It's 1 Corinthians 7:29 through 31. And I'll read them in the King James Version. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives and they that have that as, be as though they have none, and they that weep as though they weep not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not, and they that buy as though they possess not, and they that use the world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. And it seems like a lot of contradictions, you know, and if you have a wife, how can you live like you don't have one? If you cry, how can you pretend you're not crying? If you rejoice, how can you not let people know that you're happy? And if you have things, how can you be like you don't possess anything? But as I looked at it more, Paul's not saying that we're to forsake our marriages or our family or our possessions. But I think he's saying to keep our lives simple and manageable, be the kind of life that he can step into and use at any point. Because soon we'll be called home, and the things that we have won't mean a thing. So I think what he's saying is live your life willing to do the work that God has given you and reach out to those that are around you. I had to think of what are my possessions, and to me, my possessions are my husband and my children. I have things, but my most important possessions are my family. And so I had to think of my children as my possessions. What does God want me to do with them? And I believe that God wants us to hold tightly to our children, to teach them, to admonish them, to bring them up the way the Lord would have us to, but also to hold them so loosely that he can take them whenever he's ready. And I was trying to decide how to approach this subject, and I talked to my son-in-law finally yesterday, and he said, Mom, you need to approach it from the painful side. So I'm going to be talking today about one of my possessions that has already went to the wedding. And you just have to bear with me. I didn't want to do this. I'll be talking mostly about Melody. Our daughter, our second daughter, Melody, was born in December of 74. She was born with a very serious heart defect. And I brought her home from the hospital, and she was such a sweet little girl and just very beautiful. And it wasn't but a week until she started showing signs of coughing, and I thought, oh, I'm certainly not a very good mom because she's sick already. And so the following week, I took her to the doctor to see if we couldn't get over this cold because Christmas was coming and we were going to have a really wonderful time together. And when I got to the doctor's office, she had a perplexed look on her face after she looked at Melody, and she said, well, I don't think it's a cold. I believe we have a really serious problem. And so she began to make arrangements for us to go to Shands Hospital, which is in Gainesville, and that's our medical center where serious problems go to. So she made the plans, and I went home and told Ben that something was wrong. I don't know. I'm so glad for a Christian family, a Christian husband who was there to support. And of course, he felt the hurt too. And so we got our things together and went to Gainesville. And they checked Melody and did a heart catheterization and found out that she was missing her right ventricle. And if you know anything about a heart, I'll maybe explain it just a little bit. When the blood comes into your heart, it comes into your right atrium, and from there it's pumped into your right ventricle, which pumps it to your lungs, and that's where you get your oxygen to keep going, and then it comes back into your left atrium, and then it goes out through your left ventricle to your body. And so the part that Melody was missing was a very vital part, because without it, you don't get any oxygen in your blood, and which was why she exhibited the problems that she did, the coughing and the choking whenever she would nurse. And so since she only weighed about 6 pounds, they wanted to wait as long as they could. So they said, we're going to send you home, and we know you'll have problems, but we'll try not to have you come back until we have to. So about 3 months old, Melody got where she couldn't hardly breathe anymore. She would turn blue when she was nursing, cough, cough, cough. And so we headed back to Shands again. And they did a surgery then if you ask a medical student, they don't even know what you're talking about anymore. Back when Melody was a child, heart transplants were not a common practice, and they were just beginning work on hearts in that kind of way. And so they did what they called a Waterston shunt, and always when they'd work on Melly, it was to prepare her for when they could really do something to help her. And so the Waterston shunt is a surgery where your pulmonary artery and your aorta cross somewhere in the middle, and they made an incision between the both of them and sewed them together. Now, this incision was the size of the end of a rubber band, to give you just a little idea of the tiny things they were working with. So every time her heart would beat, it would force some of that blood back through that little hole, and she would get a little bit of oxygen to go through her body. And they had no idea really how big to make that incision, how long it would last, whether it would work. But it lasted her for 23 years. And so I feel like that was maybe the first miracle the Lord did in her life. And so we went home, and before that, I want to think as I go through my journey of what our mission field is. You know, we spent 2 years in Central America on the mission field there. That was one kind of mission field. But the kind I was in at that point was the kind of sitting in hospitals and encouraging people who were in the same boat, or there were days when I needed the encouragement and there were others there for me. There's there's lots of ways to be in mission work. And that's another aspect of this talk. I don't know where you're at today. I don't know if you're a mom that stays home every day with your children. You change diapers, you settle fights, you read books, you cook, you know all the things. I don't know if you're that kind of mom, or if you're a mom that you work out in the public. You have people around you that don't know the Lord. Is that where your mission field is? Or are you a grandma who has children coming in every little bit for encouragement? Just think about where you are in your pilgrimage. What is it that the Lord is, where has the Lord placed you, and what is your mission field? We listened to some ladies this morning already, or this afternoon, who have been missionaries out on the field. That's a mission field. So as we go along, I'll probably bring in some of those different kinds of mission fields that I felt like the Lord was taking us on through this journey. The days of the hospital, I felt like I was there to be an encourager to other people. And it's not hard to find someone who's a little bit worse off than you. And okay, Melody grew not like most children, but she grew, and she was a very exciting child. She was happy, she was friendly, she loved people, she loved to be involved in things. She wanted to be just like everybody else. At the age of 15, our oldest daughter, Yolanda, came to us and she said, "I want to go with teen missions. I want to go to Papua New Guinea." And I thought, wow, you're only 15. I was 18 before I ever left the state of New York. And but I had an excitement within me for her. And we, as a family, we all worked together. We made a way for her to go. It takes a lot of money to do these kind of things. And so we as a family worked at it together, and Yolanda went in summer missions. She came home a different person. She had caught a glimpse of what the Lord was doing in the rest of the world and what he could do through her. And when you have that kind of excitement in your life, it isn't long until someone else gets that excitement also. And Melody came and she said, "I want to go." Well, it's one thing to get it ready for Yoli to go, but Melly was a different story. And my mother's heart wanted to make so she could have the privileges that other children had. So Ben and I talked about it, and we decided that the only way she could go was if we went. And if we were the leaders on the team and she was our responsibility, then we could allow her to go and experience that. So that meant that we needed to go through the program of learning how to be a leader for teen missions and also being willing to accept the responsibility for 30 other young people. And so we did that. And we did that for 3 summers. And an experience I would never trade for anything. I'm not doing it again, but Melody had the disability, but the Lord gave us the blessing of her living and dealing with her disabilities. She had a desire to reach out to other people. She had an excitement about life, and because of her, our family did a lot of things that maybe we wouldn't have done had she been like every other child. And so we went as leaders, and our 2 youngest children went along because they had to. We couldn't leave them home alone. So our whole family experienced missions, and it was really good. And I want to stop here and encourage you as parents to allow your children to experience things in the world. You know, there's a whole world outside of the United States. And until you go and experience some of what's happening in the rest of the world, you really have lived a very sheltered life. And so I would like to encourage you as parents to help your children to get a world vision, help them to see what's out there, and be willing to turn loose of them just a little bit to allow the Lord to be able to use them, and for them to be able to express what the Lord is doing in their life. So each time the Lord worked with our children, I felt like he was prying my hand open just a little bit further. And instead of being my possessions, they were becoming his possessions. Another thing about Melody, she wanted to become a nurse. And there again, maybe I have a negative attitude sometimes, but I thought, oh, honey, you can't be a nurse. You don't have the strength to do what a nurse needs. And so I think I probably reacted more out of wanting to shield her from anything happening in her life that would maybe make her feel discouraged. And so, you know, but finally I said, okay, I think that's something that you should do. If that's what you want to do, you go ahead and be a nurse. And so she went to school, and I don't know how she physically had the strength to do all the clinicals that she needed to do, but she became a nurse, and she never worked as a nurse, and I don't think she ever planned to. I think she did it because she needed to show herself that she could be like all the other, she could be like Yolanda, she could be like the other young people in the world. I feel like the Lord allowed her to be a nurse to take care of herself, and I think it helped her to understand herself maybe a little bit more. There again, I feel like the Lord had gifted her in that area. He had gifted her with the compassion for people. And I think as you look at your children, look into their lives and see what their gifts are. How is it that the Lord can use them in his service and help your children to follow the pursuits that the Lord has given them? Okay. After nursing school, Melody had the privilege of going to SMBI for 3 terms. And she was excited to be able to be on her way and probably to be free of us a little bit. She had an independent spirit. She wanted to be able to make it without mom and dad. And always in the back of my mind was, but will people understand? Will people watch out for her? Well, the Lord had someone there at Bible school that was very willing to watch out for her. And his name was Glenn Lauver. And such a wonderful young man that the Lord provided. And it wasn't long until Glenn was calling and wanting to know if he could marry our daughter. And I thought, well, now, wait a minute. We haven't even talked about courting yet. And my mother's heart wanted to make sure that he knew about her, that he knew what he was getting. I knew he was getting something precious, but he was also getting something else. And he assured me that he knew exactly what he was getting. And so, again, the Lord said, can't you open that hand just a little bit further? So we did. And Melody married Glenn, and I think they both knew that their time would be short. There wouldn't be a long life together. There would be no 50-year anniversary. But they began their life with an intensity, an intense joy and a peace with each other. And Melody milked the cows. She sat out on the bale and talked to Glenn while he milked. They did things together, and they had a wonderful time. After Melody moved to Pennsylvania, she needed to find a new a new doctor, and so she, her and Glenn went to Harrison, to Hershey Medical Center, and got connected with Dr. Davidson, a fine Christian man that the Lord had prepared the way for us to have. And so he watched over her and cared for her. And time went on, and she always had to have updates in her care. They would fix this, tweak that, take care of, I don't know what all the things they did. They, you know, just classified it as she needed another heart checkup. And so Melody was scheduled for, in 1997, for another heart checkup. It was to be very routine. They were going to do whatever they needed to do. And but it was not to be anything serious. And so our whole family gathered our things together, and we went up to be with Melody. Well, we got there, and the surgery was postponed a couple days because of something with the doctor, and so Ben had to go home, and so I stayed, and we went to the hospital. I can remember the trip to the hospital was before the trip, Glenn had asked me if I would share something that morning for a devotional, and I read to them Psalms 91, and it seemed like a really good, appropriate chapter, and we read it, and we got on our way, and I can remember springtime in Pennsylvania is very beautiful for those of you that live here. You have a beautiful corner of the world. The forsythia was blooming. It was yellow all around, and we don't have that in Florida. So I can remember it was just a beautiful ride, and Melody went into surgery, and she was supposed to be out within 4 hours, and it got to be late afternoon, and we hadn't heard anything. So, you know, we would sort of try to check, but we, you know, no one really seemed willing to tell us too much. And so finally, the nurse came out and said that there's been some very bad complications, and that she couldn't stay long, but they would get back with us when they could. The Lord was opening my hand a little further. And so about, I think it was probably about 6 o'clock, which was, or maybe even a little later, it was at least 4 hours late. And the surgeon came out, and he apologized. He said, things did not go at all like we had planned. When they were putting her heart back into her body, they take it out. Not seen it, but they put her on a heart-lung machine to breathe and rotate her, circulate her blood while she's in surgery. And somehow when they were putting her heart back in, her pulmonary artery ruptured. It doesn't take long to lose the supply of blood that you have if that happens. And so they went to the freezer, like most of us. You just go to the freezer and get what you need. And they went to the freezer and they got a piece of an artery and sewed it back in there. And the problem was that they had to put her back on the heart-lung machine, which I think I don't know a lot about these things, but I think there's like a 4-hour limit, or after 4 hours, it starts damaging your blood, makes it break down. And so she was on an extra 4 hours, which is what made all the complications afterwards. When Melly got out of surgery, let me see what time it is. When Melly got out of surgery, she didn't look at all like anybody I had ever seen before. Her face was about this big. She didn't resemble herself at all, and the doctor didn't know whether she would mentally be okay when she woke up because of the loss of oxygen, the time there in surgery where they worked on her. And so it went on for probably almost a month before we actually knew that mentally she was okay. All of her systems seemed to shut down at different times, and They worked with her, and God wasn't ready for her to come home to the wedding at that point. She got better, and I can remember one of the nights in the waiting room where I was sitting by myself waiting for a time when I could go and see her, and I read again the chapter 91 in Psalms. The last two verses spoke to my heart, and it was like the Lord assuring me that all would be well. I want to read them to you. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. In the quietness of that room, the Lord spoke to my heart, and he said, it'll be all right. And now I've, you know, from down the road looking back, that could mean any number of things. Sometimes it's all right one way, and sometimes it's all right another way. This time, it was all right. He was going to take care of her. He was going to bring her back to us. And I won't, because of time, I won't go into... She was in intensive care for 3 months, and half of the time they didn't allow her to wake up, because whenever she did, she would just, I don't know what would happen, but her heart was not able to stand that, so they would put her to sleep again. And finally they were trying to get her awake, and we wanted to know, was she going to be okay? We still didn't know. And I enjoy quilting and sewing and making stuff. And so before I came up for this surgery with her, I marked a quilt that I was going to applique, and I had all my stuff. And she kept kidding me about that. She said, you can just leave that here with me. I said, no, sir, this is my quilt. So we sort of had a running little joke about that before the hospital. So after her surgery, it had already been about at least 3 weeks, and I pretty much had the quilt appliqued. And Melody was starting to wake up, but she couldn't talk because she had a ventilator on, but she had a little cardboard that she could point to letters, and she would spell out to us what we wanted to know. And Glenn said to her, whose quilt is that? And she looked at me, and she pointed to M, or who is the quilt for? And she pointed to M-E. And I said, honey, you can have the quilt. It was such a joy to hear. Or to know that she was able to think of the past. She was able to formulate a thought. And the quilt was hers. So then as time went on, she wasn't able to, didn't have enough strength to get off the ventilator. And that was the problem through the first 2 months of, she just could not get off the ventilator. So she had they put a trach in, and we still, you know, we hadn't been able to talk with her. We didn't know to what extent she knew things. And so once they did the trach, Glenn was reading some verses to her, and he read in Isaiah 40:39, I believe. They that wait upon the Lord, that had always been her favorite verse. And he looked up, and she was saying the verse with him. She couldn't make a sound. But Dr. Davidson was in there at the time, and he said, well, if anybody can quote a Bible verse, we know that mentally she is okay. And so it was, the Lord was giving us joys along the way, and that was really a precious time. Melody did finally get strong enough to go home. She went home like a little old lady. She had a walker, and she needed it to get around. But it wasn't long until I talked to her, and she had been out in the barn with Glenn. She had been out milking cows. She rode with him on the tractor. And so we knew that she was getting better. Things were looking up. And it probably was in June of that year, Glenn called, and he said, I have a surprise for you. I said, well, I like surprises. He said, would you like to have Melody for a week? I said, well, of course we would like to have Melody for a week. And so he made plans for to send her home just to spend some time with us. And so we had a wonderful time. She was still rather weak, but she was getting along good enough to enjoy life. And Jesse's our youngest, well, our only son. He took her out on a sea-doo, you know, like out on the water. She couldn't steer it. She wasn't strong enough. But he helped her, and they went around the pond and just had a wonderful time. And she went fishing back at a pond. And she rode the motorcycle. It was just a really blessed time from the Lord. She was more like herself than she had been for a whole year. And she went back home, and a month later she called me, and she said, Mom, I don't feel good. I said, well, tell me what's wrong. She said, I haven't felt good all day. And she said, my pulse is only about 40. I said, well, honey, that's not very good. And but I was in Florida and she was in Pennsylvania. And again, the Lord was saying, open your hand just a little bit further. So I tried to do that. And so I said, well, honey, why don't you call Dr. Davidson and see what he has to say. And I'll call you back in about 15 minutes. So she called, but he was on vacation. And inside my heart, I thought, well, why does he have to be gone right when we need him? But that was part of God's plan. And the doctor that was on call didn't know Melody. He didn't know that she was a different case than most. And so he said, well, people that are on your kind of medicine, this is a usual occurrence. Maybe not quite that low, but it should be fine. And they would have had an hour and 15-minute drive down to Hershey. And he said, you can come if you want to, but you can wait until tomorrow and see how you feel. And so she said they would talk about it. And so when I called her, she told me that. And I said, oh, honey, what do you think? And I wanted to say, go right now. Go down and see what's wrong. And she said, I think we're going to wait till tomorrow. And I didn't feel comfortable with that. But I wasn't there. And that was the decision that she made. And I think the Lord helped her make that decision, as hard as it is to think about. They went to bed that night, and in the morning, before Glenn went to the barn, she woke up, and they talked, and she said she was feeling good. So he went out to do chores, and I know she was on his mind. And of all mornings to have a brand new calf, if you've ever dealt with animals like that, you know they don't always cooperate. The calf was up in the field, and he said I had to carry the calf because she wouldn't walk fast enough, and because he was hurrying to get back in. And he came into the house and was washing up in the washroom, and the stairs come down from the upstairs right behind that wall. He said, I heard her coming down the stairs, and he thought, oh, she's okay. He heard her open the door to the kitchen, and then he heard her fall. And that was the last that he knew of what she was doing. She fell into the kitchen, and of course, he quickly ran in and tried to do what he could. He called 911, and they live out in the country, so it took a little bit for them to get there. Melody had been babysitting a little boy, and that mom was an RN, and it was time for her to come. So Glenn quickly called her and told her, and she said, I'll be there in a couple minutes. 15 minutes is too long to be without oxygen. But when the ambulance people got there, they got her heart started, and twice before leaving Glenn's driveway, they had to stop and restart her heart. Melody went home with the Lord at that point. But because of man's intervention, she lived another 10 days. They called us and told us that Melody was at Hershey Medical Center. And Ben finished his mail route, and we started on our way up. And I just kept thinking, well, maybe the Lord's done it so many times. Maybe he's going to do it again. And I don't know why we had to go through those last 10 days. It was probably maybe for us more than anything else that we got to see her again. She looked good. She looked like herself. But there was no response. Melody was not at home. And so in the process, you know, it takes time to work through those kind of situations. And finally, Dr. Davidson came and talked with us, Glenn and Ben and I, and he said, "Glenn, what do you want to do?" And Glenn said, "Well, what should I do?" I think we all wanted someone else to tell us what we knew needed to be done. And Dr. Davidson said, "If you love her, let her go." And so that's what we did. And so we resigned ourselves to that, and you prepare your mind for that. The next morning, you know, he explained to us what the process would be like. They would turn off the ventilator first, and he said, "She'll probably just fade away." So we were prepared for that. Uncle Jesse and Aunt Gladys were there with us, and Ben's cousin Gloria Wiener was there, and Ben and I and Glenn and our children. So we were all there wanting to be with her through this last time. And the machine had stopped, but Melody kept on breathing. And it was sort of like, oh, and then another panic came. Now what do we do? If there's nothing there of her, do we want her to keep breathing? But the Lord slowly, she was closing down, and we were standing beside her, and I was holding her hand, and I looked at the monitor, and the line was getting flatter, and I closed my eyes, and I all of a sudden I saw a bright light, and it was warm, it was comfortable, there was no fear in it, and I didn't say anything to anybody at the time. I just, you know, I just stood there, and with my eyes closed, the light faded, and someone said, "The line is flat." Now, I don't know if I was squeezing my eyes so tight I saw a light. I don't know if I was imagining a light, but I feel like I saw a light. And that light was Jesus, and he was coming, and he took her to the wedding. Since that day, I don't think I have the fear of dying that I had at one point. How many of you have ever, well, you probably maybe don't remember for yourself, but you remember for your children, you're coming home from church and they fall asleep in the car, and you carry them in the house. Now, when they went to sleep, they were in a car. They knew they were in a car. When they woke up, they were in their bed. When Melody stopped breathing, she was in a bed. When she opened her eyes, she was in heaven. I think the Lord did that for me so that I would open my hands completely and let her rest in the rest that the Lord has given her. There's no doubt in my mind where she is. There's also no doubt in my mind of What happens? What will happen to me when I close my eyes that last time? That hand of the Lord will be there, and He will lead me across. It's not scary. It's comforting. And I have a wonderful husband. I have a wonderful family. I'm trying to hold loosely to each one of them. If I had time, I could go through many stories such as this of my husband, who before we were married was diagnosed with acute lymphatic leukemia. We've been married 39 years. The Lord wasn't ready for him yet. I could tell you about Chad and Jenny being in the epicenter of the earthquake in China. They didn't get a scratch. The Lord wasn't ready to take them home. We each are on a journey. We're going the way that the Lord has called us to go. And I don't know what your journey will be like. And I don't know how the rest of my journey will go. But I do know that I am heading for heaven. I do know that Jesus has promised to meet me there. He has promised to take me across. He has promised to fulfill all that He has started in my life. I don't know what's happening in your life. I don't know the joys or the struggles that you're facing. But I do know that the Lord will take you on your journey. He will take you as much as you will open your hand and let him lead. And as you go through life and as you walk on this journey, you're called to be a missionary for him as you go. I don't know what your mission field is. I don't know if it's little children. I don't know anything about your mission field. I know my mission field is, at this point, is not in some foreign country. It's right here with my family, with my community, with the people that God has put in my way. And it's my responsibility to watch out for them as they're on their journey. It's my responsibility to reach out and help them along the way. I know you've been to weddings. They're so much fun, and the joy and the excitement of getting ready, the beautiful dresses, the flowers, the cake, the food, the people, the whole thing. But in our spiritual wedding, Jesus wants for us to be that excited about our marriage to Him. He wants us to be excited about the preparation, and that's the journey we're on. He wants us to stop and help those along the way who are maybe having a little trouble getting ready for the wedding. Maybe the circumstances of their trip are harder than yours. Reach out and encourage them and help them along the way. And I had to, along with what our mission fields are, I thought of the story of in 1 Samuel of David when he went to fight the Philistines. And while they were gone, the Amalekites came and burned their town and took their wives and children. And when they came back, everything they had was gone. And so David says, "Let's go get them." Well, part of the group were so tired, and so they just couldn't go on. And David said, "Okay, you stay here. You stay here and guard what's left of the town and our stuff. You stay here." And he took the rest of the men and he went on. And they found the Amalekites and they destroyed them. And they brought the spoil back. On the way back, the men that were with David said, the other men came out to meet them. And they said, "No, you can't. You can't have any of this. You didn't go and help. And David's called them men of Belial, which is not a very endearing term. He said, you're evil men. Those who stayed with the stuff will get just the same reward as you who went. And that's very comforting to me, because right now my mission outreach is here. Some people are out on the field and they're winning souls. They're doing great things. But God says, if you're faithful where I have called you, if you're working in the vineyard that I've asked you to be in, you will get the same reward as those that you pray for, as those that you send money to. You may be raising a child that will grow up to be a great missionary. You will take part in that reward of that person because of your faithfulness. So I just want to encourage you, wherever you are, whatever your mission field is, be faithful and keep working, because the Lord has a journey that he's taking you on, and he will be faithful with you until the end. I had another little thing I wanted to mention. It was interesting. A friend of ours was in town, in Bluntstown, last week, and we were talking, and she told me that one time she was in a race, a 5K race, and she said, I'm not a very good runner, so I just did a little race. And she said, I wasn't in the beginning of the pack. I wasn't the last one, but I was somewhere in the middle, but I was running. And she said it wasn't too hard, but, you know, I kept going. So I knew I had a long ways to go. And someone on the sidelines saw her, and they recognized her, and they knew that she wasn't a runner, but she was in the race. And he called her, and he said, go, Ruby, finish. And that's what I want to say to you. I don't know where you are in your race, but finish, and finish good. That's all God asks of us. Open your hands and let loose of what you're holding. Allow the Lord to use it for his honor and glory, and you will receive the blessing in the end. Thank you.